So you're a coach, designer, massage therapist, butcher, baker, candlestick maker. So what? What do you offer that makes you more worthy of my dollar than the other person doing exactly the same thing? What do you most believe in? Why does your business matter? For example, here's one version of my why. I believe in the magic that happens when people trust themselves. How do you do it? The way I do it is, this might be your proprietary process or value proposition that differentiates your product or service from everyone else. It's more tangible than your why. It might be quantifiable or qualifiable, and it also describes the action you take to make your why come to life. The way I help people increase trust in themselves is by empowering them with information about their energetic type. What is quote-unquote it? I make this happen by offering. The what of your statement is the result of your why and your how. It is the products and services that people purchase from you. This is the most straightforward part of your introduction, yet it is more meaningful when it comes last rather than first. You've piqued someone's curiosity with your first two statements, so this is where you make it concrete. I make this happen through individual coaching with introverts who want to amplify their natural strengths. The process of identifying your why, how, what is not as easy as it may seem. Notice that I introduced my example why with the words one version. There are multiple reasons why I started my business, and I'm willing to play around with different phrases depending on my audience or the platform. Give yourself the same space. This may not be comfortable at first. Most of us introverts like to know precisely what we're going to say before we say it. Practice your why at larger events where you're meeting new people, because here's a helpful little secret. Chances are, no one is going to remember your exact introduction next time they see you, if you ever meet again at all. Also, it's likely the person you're talking to is too busy thinking about what she's going to say when you stop talking. Sometimes we think we'll cause market confusion if we vary our introduction from event to event. The truth is that unless you have an extremely memorable, sticky statement, they'll remember only the type of business you have. Allow that knowledge to free you up from needing to have the perfect words before you start networking. The language you use will probably evolve as your business evolves. Over time, you will develop different lead-in words or find more succinct ways to make your point. You'll settle into an introduction that feels comfortable, and you might find you actually enjoy the process of introducing yourself and your business to someone new. Honor your desire to project confidence and to shake off any nerves by practicing your introduction until it feels completely natural and unrehearsed. Val Nelson says, "Connect from the heart. Rehearsed words and pitches usually land on deaf ears. Just connect. Be yourself. Find common ground even if it's not relevant to your offerings. You both have a new puppy? Then talk about that. When they're feeling it, they'll naturally ask you what you do and stay engaged in the conversation. No matter how you structure your short introduction or how you respond to the "What do you do?" question, keep the emphasis on your why. This strategy is perfect for the introvert entrepreneurs because it keeps the focus on our offer rather than on us as individuals. What's the benefit you offer or the problem you solve? Here's a great example I heard at an event a few years ago. I connect people with resources to causes they care about. His profession? A fundraiser for a nonprofit. He put the emphasis on his contribution rather than his job title. Being able to answer those three questions shouldn't take more than 20 seconds or so. It's not a rundown of your entire business plan. It's a simple way to structure a teaser that lets listeners decide if they want more. And rehearsing will help you be relaxed and flexible when it's time to deliver. Know who you're talking to and practice customizing your answer to fit the audience. Another benefit to these questions? They shine the light on how well you've niched your business. It's worth really drilling down to craft a statement that reflects your motivation, personality, and niche in a way that unquestionably differentiates you from everyone else. During the event, Herodotus said, "All men's gains are the fruit of venturing." The networking event itself doesn't have to be exhausting. There are a variety of ways you can take care of your introvert energy and still make meaningful connections with people. The first and perhaps most important thing to remember is to relax and breathe. Allow yourself space to notice tension in your body, or if you're holding your breath or doing too much shallow breathing. Lower your shoulders, roll your head, shake your hands, yawn, smile. I find putting my palms over my eyes for a few seconds, with my fingers resting lightly on my forehead, brings me a sense of peace and calm. You can do this casually when no one notices or realizes what you're doing, or excuse yourself and use the restroom for a quick relax and breathe break. The next tip might seem obvious. Wear comfortable clothing. Nothing too tight, short, big, small, or itchy. It's challenging to relax and be fully present when you're constantly wishing you could sit down and take off your once comfortable, now painful shoes for a few minutes. Here are more ways you can tap into your introvert strengths during the event. Start slowly. Don't immediately throw yourself into the thick of things. It's not necessary to jump right in, shaking lots of hands. You're not running for president. Sip a beverage and watch the group. Watch others as they interact for clues about how people are working the room. Seek out someone you know to help you warm up to the room and the event. Ask your friend to introduce you to someone she knows, which is easier than a cold introduction. I learned a great tip from Arden Kleiss, president of Kleiss Etiquette. When you're making an introduction, offer a small piece of information to each person that will facilitate conversation. For instance, if Joe is a mountain biker and Sally just finished summiting Mount Rainier, share those tidbits and let their mutual love of the outdoors ease them into conversation. You may not always know these types of details about each person, but if you do, find a way to work them into your introductions. As an introvert, you'll be glad the informative introduction you made between two people takes off easily without any additional input needed from you. Take on the mental role of host. Set an intention that you will focus on making others comfortable and welcome by smiling, asking questions, and drawing out folks who look uncomfortable, perhaps fellow introverts. Don't spend lots of energy trying to be dazzling or charming. It will happen naturally. And instead, focus on being fully present, curious, and sincere. Own your energy inside and out. The question mark is your best friend. The best conversationalists are those who have genuine curiosity about other people. Ask questions about the other person's work and interests. Use those observation skills again to look for clues for conversation, such as an unusual business name. Notice what seems to light the other person up. It may be his family, recent travels, talking about his business, and ask questions that encourage him to talk. You can certainly talk about yourself. There's a strong chance that your conversation partner will turn the tables on you and say, "I just returned from South America. Where have you traveled lately?" You can decide what you're comfortable sharing in the moment because you've prepared in advance. Focus on talking to one person at a time. You may find yourself as part of a small group, but even then, focus on the person talking or asking questions. Make eye contact with everyone, but don't feel like you have to scan the group the whole time. Use your introvert gifts of making one-on-one connections to your advantage. It can be very flattering to the person you're talking to if you are truly focused on her. Paula Swenson, artist and founder of Creative Spirals, offers, "Concentrate 100% on the person in front of you and ask questions, then really listen to the answers. So few people listen. Doing so will make you stand out from the crowd. Plus, it is much easier as an introvert to listen than to talk. Be yourself. Don't think you have to be really outgoing and extroverted to be an effective networker. Show up with your natural curiosity, sense of humor, and ability to listen. During the event, preserve your sanity by taking breaks as you need to, by stopping into the restroom or lounge, slipping out for a quick walk around the block or down the hall. Decide when you've had enough. Share your energy while it feels good, and give yourself permission to leave when you've had enough. Say goodbye to the people you want to connect with later. Don't feel like you need an elaborate excuse to leave. There's no rule that says you have to be the one to turn out the lights." After the event. Anonymous: "The greatest oak was once a little nut that held its ground." Where do most people fail to make the most of networking events? It's not how they show up at the event itself. It's how they show up or don't show up afterward. They continue to be little nuts, not realizing that with some cultivation, they could grow into mighty oaks. For many introvert entrepreneurs, even following up with self-identified leads can be challenging. These are leads for which the person fills out an offer sheet asking to be contacted. Or maybe the person handed you her business card and said she'd like to learn more. A lead can't get much warmer, yet we're often diffident about reaching out to them. What's up with that? Chances are it's those pesky FUDs rearing their ugly heads again in the form of negative self-talk. We may think to ourselves, oh, she just said that to be nice, or I don't know, he didn't seem like he'd be my ideal client. We come up with excuses and procrastinate. And meanwhile, someone else is following up with that same lead and making progress on the relationship. I've heard from various sources that the majority of sales happen after at least 8 contact points through email, phone, and mail. 8. Other sources cite that between 5 and 20 plus touches are needed before a sale is made. And the bad news for prospects who need their services is that most entrepreneurs, especially phone-adverse introvert entrepreneurs, stop after just 1 or 2 attempts. The sad truth is that most people don't follow up, even when a prospect opens the door for us. You will stand out in the crowd and flex your introvert relationship-building muscles if you follow up within 24 to 48 hours of meeting someone. You'll also demonstrate that you care about their business if you practice patience and persistence when it comes to cultivating the relationship. I've seen opportunities take several months to come to fruition, not the days or weeks that I wish they would. Remember, you and your prospect have different timelines, and they are almost never operating according to yours, which is invariably much faster. It's important to develop a sense of when your communications are starting to be heard and when they're falling on deaf ears. You can waste a lot of your introvert energy on people who are flat out not interested, but keep stringing you along. If you sense that's happening, give them an opening to cut the cord. Be direct and say, I want to explore this opportunity further, and I sense that the timing may not be right for you and that I might not have what you need. If that's the case, just let me know. I only want to continue the conversation if it's going to be beneficial to you. Here are a few more tips for reluctant networkers on following up. Send each person you spoke with for more than a few minutes a short email or snail mail note. Helpful hint, these days a handwritten note makes a more lasting impression. Reference something you discussed, how he or she can reach you, and leave the door open for a future connection, such as, I'd appreciate the opportunity to talk in more detail about your business. Don't say you'll be in touch again if you won't. And don't make a sales pitch at this point in the conversation. Keep the focus on the other person. Finish what you started. If you offered an introduction or referenced an article or book, follow through by making the needed calls or emails as soon as possible, preferably within a 48-hour window. The longer it takes you to complete these tasks, the more difficult it becomes and the more excuses you will generate. File the info someplace where you can use it. After the event, write on the back of each person's business card the date, event, what you spoke about, and any follow-up actions. Keep a file, electronic or paper, of contacts that you can reference as you meet others. Being able to connect others, you two should know each other, is a valuable networking skill. People also remember fondly the person who connected them to a person, book, or other resource. Each time they come in contact with that resource, they're likely to think of you. And how wonderful is that for us introvert entrepreneurs? The mother of all networking events, the professional conference. Close your eyes and think back to the last big conference or symposium you attended. What did you see, hear, feel? Chances are your recollections are very similar to my own. You see hundreds of strangers. Your schedule is full of back-to-back meetings in large, impersonal rooms. There may be a noisy exhibition hall with vendors smiling behind dishes of chocolate and vying to get your attention. In the actual sessions themselves, you have to endure small talk and icebreakers. And if that weren't enough, the last session doesn't mean your day is over because you feel obligated to attend the optional happy hours and city tours. For most introverts, any one of these situations in a day would be draining. All of them at once? Totally exhausting. Yet, usually it's these things and more that we encounter every time we go to a large event or conference. In spite of all of this, believe it or not, I actually love going to conferences. Even though the logistics drain me, I enjoy hearing interesting speakers, getting takeaway information in the form of handouts, worksheets, and resources, and being challenged to think in new ways. I always figure that if I come away with at least one inspiring idea, paradigm shift, or meaningful connection, it was worth the stress and expenditure of energy. But when I think back to various events I've attended, even the ones I was extremely interested in, I had to force myself to go. Just anticipating the event made me preemptively exhausted. Thank goodness for the conferences that provided a minute-by-minute schedule. I could sit with it each morning and do a mental dress rehearsal, plotting my entrances and exits. The challenge is that most large events seem to subscribe to the notion that we have to be together every second of the day and cram every minute with activity to get our money's worth. If you want to slip away for some quiet time, you are inevitably going to miss a keynote, a session, or a meal, all undesirable options when you've paid good money to be there. Conference stressors and their antidotes. Patty Kay is a fellow introvert entrepreneur who asked me to team up with her to do a survey of other introverts about their experience at large events. Patty initiated the project after coming back from an event where she talked to several people who said they were overwhelmed and had to drag themselves there, quote, because I know it'll be good for me, as nearly everyone put it. Patty's hunch was that there were lots of introverts who wanted to attend events and wanted to have a good experience, but a large conference's plethora of offerings was just downright anti-introvert. One highlight from the survey was a list of the biggest stresses introverts experienced at large events. Unstructured networking, little to no opportunity for meaningful connections, not enough places and opportunities to get away from crowds, and pressure to attend social activities before or after, and in addition to, the regular schedule. When asked what effect these stresses had on their event experience, one respondent wrote, "When I take breaks or leave early, I feel like I'm missing out, even though doing so is crucial to my sanity." Another said, "I usually love these events and spend a lot of time with lots of new people, although no parties or annoying exuberance, please, but I'm knackered the week after." Since the occasional large event is part of every entrepreneur's experience, it's good to have a few survival strategies to help you make the most of the situation and lessen that knackered feeling. Give yourself a break. Nothing says you have to be present every minute of every event. Look at the agenda and decide in advance when, if needed, you can go back to your room or go for a walk. Often you can get the handouts, a recording, or notes from a colleague afterward. The event planners give you a schedule and act like it's do or die, but you have a choice to follow it or not. The alternative is ending the day feeling like you've been run over by a Mack truck, which doesn't exactly support having a positive, energizing experience. Focus on making others feel welcome. Smile, ask questions, and draw out those who look uncomfortable. Think of a few stock questions in advance. What's the best presentation you've been to so far? What ideas are you most excited to implement once this is over? Or, what did you think of the lunch keynote? These are especially useful questions for breaking the ice during the rubber chicken dinner session. Plan for your comfort. A few things we know for certain. Room temperatures fluctuate and food quality is often a toss-up. It's easier to stay present and focused on your learning when you're not distracted by physical discomfort. Consider the advice from this survey respondent. Planning really helps, for instance, bringing a bag with layered clothes, drinks, and snacks to events with a packed schedule. Quit while you're ahead. Don't pressure yourself if you feel you'd rather take a pass on the social extras and obligations that come with being at an event, including, but not limited to, happy hours, early breakfast meetings, and going out with the gang for dinner. While you might feel out of the loop temporarily because you missed hearing the story about the time your boss caught a fish this big, chances are you'll appreciate your choice to recharge alone much more. Learn to say a firm no thanks and, without excuses or being defensive, take care of yourself. Until that day when planners intentionally make events more introvert-friendly, which I'm guessing more than a few extroverts would appreciate as well, we'll just have to take matters into our own hands and do what we can to take care of ourselves. In fact, that wisdom applies to much of the introvert entrepreneurial journey. Introvert Entrepreneur Focus. Brian Genesco, founder of Wicked Start, New Kitchen, and Start Out. Question. Most introverts hear the word networking and think of working a room at an event. You have a different perspective. How do you define networking? Answer. I define networking as managing a select group of contacts for a specific business outcome, whether that's establishing new contacts or maintaining existing ones. In my case, I might network to gain more user traction or find investors interested in promoting entrepreneurship. It's about engaging others in my why and expanding opportunities. By approaching networking this way, I can leverage my introvert energy. I'm more inclined to listen, take time for myself, and focus on one person at a time. Typically, when I'm out in a public setting and networking, I tend to appear much more extroverted. However, I do focus and find that making one or two deeper connections is more valuable than a dozen superficial connections. Question. You're a fan of Simon Sinek's Start With Why. How has knowing your why made you a more effective networker? Answer. My entrepreneurial mission, obsession actually, is to help people reach higher ground with easy step-by-step processes. In every business I've owned, it's about serving the customer. This common thread is my personal why, which is my reason for what I do. By starting with an authentic expression of who I am and what I believe, I'm able to translate my why into business opportunities. Even more than that, I'm willing to go that extra mile to achieve success. I have the perfect example of how it's worked for me. During New Kitchen's early days, we were looking for ways to gain more visibility. We thought a celebrity connection would do the trick. My co-founder and I put our heads together, and it didn't take long to figure out that Sarah Jessica Parker was our ideal celebrity connection. We all know someone who knows someone. I happened to be at a party where I met Broadway director and choreographer Jerry Mitchell. After a little small talk about his work, it was clear that he knew anyone connected to Broadway, including Matthew Broderick, Parker's husband and star of The Producers. Another acquaintance, Kristen Chenoweth, was also a friend of Matthew's, so I had two connections and an increased chance of reaching Sarah Jessica Parker. Ultimately, Broderick was asked to try our service for a month, and he said yes. After a month, he continued for another month, so we took the bold step of asking if his wife would try it. Within a day, his assistant got back to me and said yes. After she received the food for a month, both Parker and Broderick agreed to let us use their names to promote our product. So within 3 months of us figuring out what and who we needed, she was on board. Our sales more than doubled, and I'm convinced that it led to other amazing opportunities for the business as well. Question. What are some other ways introverts can make networking work for their business? Answer. There are three things that you can do to be a more productive networker and, by extension, be seen as an expert in your area. First, use social media to identify your select group of contacts. Be active on discussion groups, post questions and answers on LinkedIn, and engage with others through introductions and recommendations. Identify people to meet in person and make the initial contact online. Second, suspend judgment about who will be helpful and who won't. Every time I made a snap judgment about someone, I have been proven wrong. Sometimes the very person I was writing off turned out to be a savior, providing a new client or maybe an investment opportunity. And finally, reach for the stars. Remember, famous people might be famous, but they're first and foremost people. You might be surprised at how receptive they are to being approached. If you think getting a celebrity's endorsement or business would benefit your business, put the intention out there. Tap into the 6 and often fewer degrees of separation you have to anyone in the world. Chapter 5. But I'm not a salesperson. I might be going out on a limb by saying this, but my guess is that most of you listening to this audiobook didn't wake up one morning, spring out of bed, and declare, "I want to go into sales." Yeah, that's not happening. Yet, I've met lots of introverts who woke up one day and declared, "I'm going into business for myself." Did they know that they were essentially saying the same thing? Why it feels like you spend 90% of your time on your biz and 10% in your biz. There's a common frustration shared by entrepreneurs during that first year of business. I didn't know I was going to have to be selling and marketing so much. I'm doing more networking than I am doing what I got into business to do. In other words, you are tapping heavily into your reservoir of extrovert energy to get your business off the ground. It may feel like you're spending about 90% of your time on marketing, networking, and sales, and only around 10% actually delivering the services or products that make up your business. This may, in fact, be your reality for at least the first year, if not longer. There are many reasons we stick with it, despite our urge on some mornings to stay under the covers and not come out until retirement. We stick with it because during the entrepreneurial honeymoon period, our pure passion and enthusiasm carries us through and gets us out of bed. Our inner extrovert has been naturally amplified, and selling comes more easily because we're excited about our new venture. Over time, however, all of the risk, initiative, and need for profit weighs on us. We spend oodles of time marketing and promoting and networking and doing everything except what we went into business to do. We start to wonder if we're cut out to be an entrepreneur because the sales side exhausts us. If you are listening to this audiobook, you may be tired, but ready to be energized, introvert style. There's a refrain that we'll be revisiting over and over in this program. Being a successful introvert entrepreneur requires that we be intentional about our energy. We have to create processes and approaches that support our personality and style. When it comes to marketing and sales, one size does not fit all. The niche, putting your stake in the ground. When I researched coach training programs, I saw message after message that encouraged me to train to be a life coach. I picked a program that resonated with me and started my journey in earnest. As I progressed through my training, I heard another cacophony of voices saying, "But don't call yourself a life coach." What? Train to be one, but don't call yourself one? At first, it didn't make sense. It was actually very frustrating. I discovered later the problem with meeting someone new and introducing myself as, "Hi, I'm Beth, and I'm a life coach." It's not specific enough. It's more of a professional category and less of a description of what I provide for someone else, and it doesn't even come close to being a reflection of my why. It lumps me in with thousands of other life coaches who claim to be able to serve anyone and coach them on anything. As I explored both through conversation and online research what it would mean to define a niche, I was surprised by how much resistance many entrepreneurs had to the idea of narrowing their market. Some embraced it, while others talked about it as if it were a last resort. "I don't want to turn anyone away," was the go-to reason for why someone hadn't declared a niche. "I don't want to focus down too far," was another. In truth, these well-intentioned reasons have the potential to undermine even your very best marketing efforts and can lead to the following. Confusion. The market doesn't know who you are or what solutions you can provide for them. Remember everyone's favorite radio station? It's WIIFM. What's in it for me? If it's not clear who you serve and to what end, your messages will all sound like static. People have two different reactions to white noise. They ignore it or they get annoyed by it. If your message is clear and focused, static will disappear for the people who are meant to hear it. Exhaustion. If your message borders on white noise, you are going to wear yourself out trying to reach everyone. Your energy for marketing is one of your most precious and often scarce resources. For the introvert, it requires expanding your capacity zone. More in Chapter 9. Day in and day out. Without a niche, your ideal client is anyone with a pulse, which means you are almost forced to spread yourself micro-thin in order to reach as many people as possible. It's like getting up every day on a small stage with a weak bullhorn and trying to shout your way through the crowds in the market. Oh, and your small stage is surrounded by hundreds of similar small stages, all trying to reach the same people. It's a recipe for energy drain on a massive scale. Building a business that's okay, but never fabulous. Many businesses bump along without a clear market. They believe in diversification and see defining a focus as putting all of their eggs in one basket. This might be a successful formula for some. But what often happens is that the business becomes a jack of all trades, master of none. This goes contrary to the introvert's desire for mastery, to go deep rather than broad. We're looking for the both and solution, being able to serve a narrow market with diverse offerings. Determining a niche, or a target market, ideal customer, or the center of your brand bullseye is one of the most important things an introvert entrepreneur can do to break away from being an average blend-in business and enter the realm of great. A well-defined niche allows you to focus your message on your ideal clients rather than on the masses, thereby saving you time, money, and energy. What my niche journey might tell you about your niche journey. Tom Peters said, be distinct or be extinct. As I started out as a professional coach, it was quickly apparent that a niche was something that was going to haunt and taunt me. I understood the wisdom of having a specific and clear focus. Finding what that focus was, however, a bumpier road than I expected. It wasn't that I was afraid to close the door and say no to a particular audience. Instead, I was interested in so many things that I would reject any idea that didn't give space and usefulness to all of my curiosity. In the beginning, I did lots of research. I alternated between drowning in overwhelm and flying with inspiration. Sometimes I thought I'd landed on a focus and I'd try it on for size. I started calling such experiences my niche du jour because they were fresh at sunrise and gone by sunset. One day in late 2009, I sat down and wrote out profiles for my current clients. I included gender, age, profession, reasons for coming to coaching, and what themes had emerged as we worked together. I found lots of personality traits that overlapped, but no common demographic or marketing segment. Frustration came and went over the next few months. I began to wonder if I was experiencing a new entrepreneurial phenomenon, NDD, or niche deficit disorder. So I gave up. I stopped trying to force it. I finally realized that I was not going to choose my niche. It was going to choose me. I decided to see who I attracted when I showed up authentically, open, and curious. My epiphany came 6 months later during a business development workshop that gave validity to looking at psychographics, which include attitudes, values, and activity, interest, opinion variables, as factors in determining one's market. I pulled up my client profiles, and guess what? The answer had been there all along, in my own words, written next to each client's profile. In the margin of each description, I'd written introvert. It was a true eureka moment. I was ready to read that word and fully appreciate its promise and possibility. That was my niche journey. Yours will be different, and only you can write it. However, reflecting on mine led me to extrapolate three simple ideas that may make your journey smoother. Trust yourself and the process. Most introverts I know love to do research. We love to be prepared and have all the facts before we make a decision. Therefore, in the journey to identifying your ideal client or customer, you will probably want to do some research to get ideas and context. Here's the challenge for you. Let that research inform, not define, your choice. Trust your instincts. When you feel excitement about a particular type of client and dread about another one, notice it. Don't be swayed by advice that all the money is in XYZ industry or clients. And don't get too wrapped up in how many other people are serving a similar niche. Not very many? Perhaps that signals market opportunity. Lots of people? Clearly, there's demand. If the idea or reality of working with those clients leaves you feeling like you swallowed a brick, trust that feeling and move on. You'll do your best work and be rewarded for it and energized by it when you're working with people who light you up. Just like no one person can meet all of your needs, neither can your niche. I'm eternally grateful to my friend and fellow introvert entrepreneur Lynn Baldwin Rhodes for her powerful question to me. Are you looking for a single niche to fill all of your needs? Indeed, I had been. We often think that if we could just find a way to incorporate everything and everyone we love into one niche, we'd be golden. What we forget is that choosing a specific market doesn't preclude exploring and enjoying other possibilities on the side. Think of your niche as the stone dropping into the water, creating a powerful presence. The ripples are related rings of expansion and curiosity. Each ripple encompasses a new possible market, but you're focusing your time, energy, and resources on the center. Working from fear-based thoughts constricts ease and flow. Where's the love? Remember what I said a moment ago about not being swayed by advice that tells you to choose a particular clientele because that's where the money is? If you choose a niche or market based purely on financial considerations, there's a good chance you'll be making that choice based on fear. Fear that your ideal market won't pay, fear of breaking from the mainstream, fear that following your heart will mean sacrifice. Also notice if your fear is rooted in the social aspect of your chosen niche. Are you concerned that it will require you to do more networking and socializing than you enjoy? Do you worry that your niche will put you in contact with people whose energy might overwhelm you? Those are certainly factors to consider, but notice if you see them as negatives because of fear or because they mean you'll have to exert more energy. We tend to find energy for the things we love, even if we're concerned they'll deplete us. Fear, however, is more challenging, but not impossible, to power through. Consider if you have the energy both to deal with the fear of the thing and the thing itself. On the other hand, choosing from love means that you are aligned with your values and your heart. Opportunities will flow. You will show up authentically and with passion. Marketing will be done with relative ease. You can work from intention, how you want to feel, and invitation, rather than I need clients, which is much more effective and fun than forcing a square peg into a round hole. The wise words of Kurt Cobain speak to this point. Wanting to be someone else is a waste of the person you are. Once I untied myself from the stranglehold the niche question had on me, I felt powerful, free, aligned. I felt like the person I am and the person I'm meant to be. If you give yourself the space and grace to experience the same, you'll be well on your way to being a sustainable and successful introvert entrepreneur. Be open to outcome, not attached. Be intentional and invite the niche in and see what shows up. The old story about being in sales and self-promoting. Part of the problem that introvert entrepreneurs encounter is that we carry around an old story about what it means to be doing sales. Much of the messaging that we see out in the marketplace has a slick, salesy feel, or a bait-and-switch approach, or, worse yet, it's not fully transparent or promises unbelievable results. We see so many people employing highly aggressive tactics that we start to wonder, what am I missing? Do these techniques actually work? Do I have to sound like that to attract clients and customers? Approaches like this must work for some people because they continue to use them. These tactics may be annoying. Perhaps there is something about them, their directness, consistency, customer-focused message, that we can adapt and modify to an introvert style. Tip: anytime you find something or someone annoying, pay attention. There may be vital lessons to be learned. One of my mentors calls this finding the homeopathic dose of whatever is annoying me. It often points to an area for growth. For example, if you find yourself triggered by someone's in-your-face approach, there's an aspect of it that you actually admire. The very directness that annoys you might be exactly what you need more of yourself. The trick is making it your own rather than imitating. One of the negative self-talk loops I've heard over the years from introvert entrepreneurs and thought myself is that I'm bothering people when I promote my business. It doesn't matter if they filled out a feedback form or requested information. When it's time for me to reach out to potential clients, I'm worried that I'm going to catch them off guard or that they're not going to remember me. Or worse, that they checked the "Please contact me, I'd like more information" box just to be nice. I make up a story about the person, and that causes me to be hesitant or even apologetic about following up with him. It's important to realize that these stories are just that, stories. They're not based in fact, and if I decide on the person's behalf that I'm forgettable, or not worth her time, or just a nuisance, how do you think I'm going to come across when I actually do pick up the phone to call her? When you start to recognize your own negative self-talk, it becomes easier to discern what's fact and what's fiction, where you're making assumptions, and how you might be sabotaging the follow-up simply by projecting feelings onto your prospect that just aren't there. Why introverts are natural salespeople. Whenever there's an old story that's recognized as being no longer useful, there's an opportunity for a new story to emerge. Chapter 1 detailed the types of stories that introverts grow up with, such as being a loner, shy, or not good with people. It's natural that those stories, which in time can become beliefs if they're not refuted, might translate into an introvert believing that he's not cut out for sales. After all, the typical image of a salesperson is someone who is outgoing, friendly, bold, enthusiastic. An introvert may be all of those things, but she may not wear those feelings on her sleeve. She may express herself in a more reserved way that isn't always understood or acknowledged by those around her. Introverts have numerous natural strengths that enable them to be genuine in what would normally be considered a sales situation, such as talking to a prospect or making a direct pitch to a customer. I call these strengths superpowers, in part because they are often hidden from view, yet supply us with the energy to leap tall buildings in a single bound, and land quietly, of course. In order to take advantage of your superpowers, there are two important housekeeping items to attend to first. Get over yourself. Your superpowers will be depleted if you get in your own way by overthinking and being too inward. While an introvert's preference is to put the focus on the other person, we can become self-absorbed when we're feeling anxious. Worry is one of the biggest culprits. We get up into our heads and the hamster wheel starts to turn with questions like, what am I going to say? What will they think of me? What if I say the wrong thing? What if they don't like me? In the end, it helps to remember that it's not about you. It's about your prospect, her problem, and your solution. Get outside yourself. You are a conduit for the message, not the message itself. Once you've gotten over yourself, it's much easier to shift the spotlight onto the other person and his problems. This perspective also comes in handy if the prospect says no. Again, it's not you who's being rejected. There's something in your message that isn't resonating, or that person wasn't your ideal client. Either way, by developing some objectivity, you can step outside yourself and extract valuable lessons for the future. 5 steps to transforming your superpowers into sales. Fanny Bryce says, "Let the world know you as you are, not as you think you should be, because sooner or later, if you are posing, you will forget the pose, and then where are you?" Once we recognize and own our introvert strengths, we can start to put them into action on behalf of our bottom line. Consider adopting the following steps as a way to reprogram the way you approach the sales process as an introvert. 1. Reframe how you think about sales. Get the image of the sleazy car salesman out of your head. The activity is business development, and you are an educator. You are sharing information that benefits others. When you educate, You're offering the who, what, when, where, and why of your services or products, and you're opening the door for someone to decide what to do with that information. If you don't educate him, you're not opening the door. As an introvert, I love this point. Being a teacher takes the focus off of me and puts it on my message and on the listener. 2. Remember why people say no. People say no because you are either offering the wrong information or you're talking to the wrong market. Makes sense, doesn't it? It makes me think of a great saying that every entrepreneur should have tacked up on the wall. A confused mind always says no. And your prospects will be confused and say no if you are offering wrong information or talking to the wrong people. Often, both are wrong because they are too broad. You want to be able to serve everyone, which means that your message has to speak to everyone, which is impossible. If you describe your ideal clients or customers as they have a pulse, consider this next point. 3. Rehearse your why, how, what. We explored this concept in Chapter 4. One of the biggest challenges I've seen among introvert entrepreneurs is that we're often clear on our value proposition in our heads, but stumble when someone asks us directly. Being able to answer your why, how, what questions with ease and clarity is one of the biggest gifts you will give yourself and your business. Once you have figured out your answers to these questions, practice saying them out loud. It may not feel natural at first, but if you don't, all the words that are perfect in your head will tumble out in a nervous twitter when you're put on the spot. Let's revisit these specific questions. Why do you do what you do? As author Simon Sinek puts it, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. Start out by sharing what motivates you. How do you do it? This adds action to your why. It includes your unique attributes that distinguish you from your peers. What is it? Finally, you reveal what it is you do. Remember, you don't have to explain every service or product in this short introduction. Your goal is to capture someone's interest and provoke curiosity. 4. Resist the temptation to rush the process. Give space for the other person to hear your message, think about it, and take the initiative. It's a dance, and the right partner will follow your lead. Yes, there is a time and place for polite persistence. It's helpful to remember, though, that our introvert tolerance for silence, either during or after a conversation with a prospect, can be low when we're in scarcity mode. If you've offered the right information to the right market, giving the process ample space will create an aura of confidence, security, and trust. Come from abundance and practice patience. 5. Repeat. Business development, sales, and education are an ongoing, day-in and day-out process. You will constantly be discovering new things about yourself and your business. As you receive feedback from your ideal clients, you'll be adjusting your strategy and message. Everything you've been working on, reframing your story about sales, remembering why people say yes or no, rehearsing your value proposition, and resisting the temptation to rush things, will strengthen over time and become second nature. As you learn to trust yourself and your value, others will reward you with their trust and business. Content is king. How working on and in your business can be the same thing. Cheshire Cat, Alice in Wonderland, says, "If you don't know where you are going, any road will take you there." Business development is not something set apart from your passion that keeps you from doing what you love. Rather, it enables you to do what you love. For me, being able to reframe sales to education makes a big difference in how I approach sharing my message. My sales calls are really prospect or discovery calls. I don't like thinking of the process in terms of quote-unquote getting clients. Instead, my mission is broader and more prospect-focused. I'm inviting people to partner with me in changing the way the world sees introversion. I trust that the partnership will bring abundance if I'm providing the right information to the right market while creating clear value. Offering strategically crafted content to your prospects is one of the most powerful ways you can create value. It doesn't matter what service or product your business is centered around. Your prospects need information to make an educated decision. A creative approach to content can make the difference between a prospect holding you at arm's length and seeing you as the go-to person for your product or service. The other benefit for the introvert entrepreneur is that having outstanding content is a way to keep the focus on the message rather than on you. You can express yourself in ways that showcase you at your best. You're offering high value to a range of people, many times without even having to interact directly with them, thereby saving your energy for the times when it's required to interact. How do you get started creating content for your business? When you're first starting out, there's a certain amount of spaghetti strategy that we all engage in. You're throwing things up against the wall and seeing what sticks. You're probably churning out a lot of content. Much, if not all, of that content is probably free. And you get good feedback and encouragement, just not the sales. This stage is the thrashing stage, where you're getting just enough positive feedback that you think if you just do more, faster, better, bigger, people will convert to clients. For most introverts, this would be exhausting. It's a lot of energy out, but not a lot coming back to you. What's missing is strategy and intention behind your content. Julie Fleming, author of The Reluctant Rainmaker, A Guide for Lawyers Who Hate Selling, was the first person who introduced me to the cycle of failure. Here's how she describes it. You're looking at the bills sitting on your desk and you say, I need clients. I need clients now. You start doing all of the activities that you've ever heard that might lead to getting clients. It feels really frantic because you're trying to do all of this different stuff all at once. And then what happens is absolutely nothing. Then you experience a crisis of confidence. The self-talk that accompanies that crisis only serves to escalate the thrashing. You may start to believe you can't attract the clients or customers that you need and that you never will. The cycle of success may start off with a similar, I need more business urgency. But instead of thrashing, you plan. You reflect on your strengths, what's worked in the past, where your prospects are hanging out, and the best way to strategically reach them. Then you execute that plan. As Fleming puts it, you're building external indications that you actually know what you're doing. As you strengthen relationships, you start to turn those relationships into business. You fine-tune the cycle as you learn what works and what doesn't, and you do it from a place of confidence. It's important to recognize what cycle you're in. The cycle of success produces forward, focused movement, even if progress is slow. The cycle of failure does not, probably because it produces confusing messages. I want to repeat this very important point. A confused mind always says no. That confused mind might say, "Great work, loved the newsletter," but it doesn't take the time to connect the dots that you have scattered all over the page. How do I create a strategy for my content? If we're going to connect those dots into a clear picture, it's important to have a framework that helps you clarify your content strategy. There are many different ways you can approach building that framework, including mind mapping, creating an editorial calendar, or keeping an online or offline idea file. No matter what technique you use, it's useful to anchor your strategy in the tried and true maxim. Someone needs to know, like, and trust you before he will invest any time, money, or energy in you or your business. We say know, like, and trust all the time without digging in and examining exactly what that maxim means. Think of it as a guiding principle. Whatever content you create should further the goal of someone knowing, liking, or trusting you more. How does someone at each stage in the know, like, trust cycle interact with you and your content? And how vulnerable are you willing to be? It's important to understand that cultivating a customer relationship is similar to cultivating a personal relationship in one key way. There's a premium placed on authenticity and transparency. Introverts tend to value their privacy, and being truly transparent is a vulnerable proposition. That's why you have to decide how much of yourself you want to reveal and in what ways you want to foster the client relationship. To help facilitate that decision process and make know, like, and trust content a natural part of your business, consider a moves management framework. Moves management is a term used in the world of nonprofit fund development. It's how fundraising professionals describe a process by which they move an individual from being a prospective donor on the fringes of the organization to being an invested, active partner in the organization's mission. I use this expression because I have found that attracting clients is very similar to raising money for an organization. Donors, and in our case, clients or customers, move through a process that is established by the organization. If the strategy is clear and intentional, and the organization knows exactly who it wants to attract, each touch point is designed to shift the relationship to a deeper level of connection. For nonprofits, the lowest level of engagement is awareness of the organization's existence and being on the mailing list. The highest level is a donor who makes a planned gift, which is allotting part of the donor's estate to the organization upon the donor's death. The donor is not necessarily aware of the process going on behind the scenes. If it's all done smoothly, the donor moves from level to level rather seamlessly and completely of her own volition. This is not about manipulating someone into doing something against her will or best interests. It's about creating an intentional pathway from initial curiosity to a mutually beneficial relationship. The same is true for your prospective clients. A well-designed moves management process outlines clear steps for you to take and clear content for you to create that transitions a client from casual to convinced. Just as you don't ask someone you just met to marry you, you don't hand someone your business card, then ask him to purchase your platinum package. The introvert approach is to ease into the relationship slowly, allowing both parties to assess its potential as it develops. Working from a clear process and framework frees up your energetic resources for delivering instead of just selling your services and products. The funnel of engagement. It may be helpful to visualize the moves management process as a funnel. The top of the funnel is wide open, reaching a large number of prospective clients with general content. As more selective people deepen their connection with you, the funnel becomes more refined and customized. There are four primary phases in the funnel of engagement: casual, connected, committed, and convinced. Casual. Investment, free. Blog, articles, quotes, freebies, resources, bookstore, social media. Offerings in the casual phase determine a prospect's first impression of you. They begin the journey of someone knowing, liking, and trusting you. They require no financial investment and very little investment of time or energy on the part of the prospect. There is potential for interaction, such as likes, comments, and sharing, but the prospect engages without any expectation that someone will follow up with her or try to make a sale. In general, unless the prospect makes a comment or is required to provide her email to access information, she can remain an anonymous lurker, something that, as an introvert, can understand. People are getting to know you at this stage. They are standing on the edge of the pool, dipping their toe in the water, deciding whether or not to take the plunge. While there is little energy investment on the part of the prospect, there is a fairly significant energy investment required of you. Carefully consider how much you want to feed the free monster. For instance, when I started doing podcasts, I published one per week. Each podcast took me between 3 and 5 hours per week to produce from start to finish. That's an incredible investment to make consistently over time, because it wasn't just the editing. It was finding interviewees, preparing questions, conducting the actual interview, and then promoting the finished product. Once I had churned out enough podcasts to have a nice library of content, I scaled back to publishing about twice per month. My learning curve also shortened, so I only spent about 3 hours total on each podcast. Creating content is satisfying and a great way to reach people, but make sure you do it with your energetic needs and other priorities in mind. connected, investment, minimal, workshops, speaking, teleclasses, radio show, podcast, newsletter, book. Products and services in this phase of the funnel require more direct communication.
Thank you for listening to this episode of our podcast. We'll be really thankful if you support us by clicking the link in the description so that we continue to create amazing content for you.